This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Five-Star Zone with Rico Beard.
Welcome to a Sweet 16 version of the Five-Star Zone. I'm your host, Rico Beard. Harold Shelton from the Big Ten Network, Senior Research Manager, joining us as usual. Harold, it's that time. Everybody from the Big Ten, well, we separated. It looked great. First round, everybody won. But now there's four teams from the Big Ten in the Sweet 16, which in most years you would be like, okay, you got a quarter of the Big Ten, quarter of the Sweet 16, that's good, except for the SEC damn near has half of it. They got seven teams in there. So really this turns into a Big Ten SEC challenge aside from Purdue and Houston. But when you look at these teams, what stood out from you over this past weekend?
I guess overall, you know, I thought the league did pretty well, you know, to start 8-0. I know they were the higher seed in most of those, but, you know, they covered the spread in all eight of those first round games. So they did it pretty convincingly. I thought there were chances to get six. I really did. You know, Wisconsin, despite being down that whole game against BYU, looked like they had a shot to win it at the end. And, you know, Tanjay kind of forced one there and came up a little short. And then Oregon had that big lead early, gave it all back, but still had a chance to tie it in the last minute. You know, unfortunately, it wasn't one of their two best players taking that shot. Right. You know, TJ Bamba, you know, kind of forces one, and then they never get a chance to tie it again. But you know, overall, I thought the league did well. You know, it's the most Sweet 16 teams they've had since 2013. So you got half of your field in, just like the SEC did. They had 14 teams. They got seven. Big Ten had
didn't
eight.
Think about it that way.
And
you're right.
Now they got four. So, you know, the cream rose to the top.
So you look at these games between Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, and who am I? Maryland. Okay, well, Maryland, man, let's just go back to that. I mean, that's the most controversial win that I've heard. Look, let's just be real. I've seen Euro steps. I've seen extended Euro steps. Queen took about six steps. I mean, you're not going to call that. But if you're Maryland, you got a gift, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't think they would have called it. I saw what Gene Steratore tried to explain it and kind of say that, you know, the ball got knocked away. And so then when he regathered, he got to start all over again, and it turned into a step and a half. But for Maryland, considering how their last three or four losses have been, they were kind of owed one. You know, you lose at the buzzer on a Trey Donaldson layup. You lose on the buzzer on a Trey Holloman half-court shot. You know, you lose off a banked-in three in the final 10 seconds against Ohio State. You lose on a buzzer-beater Nick Martinelli. Like, those were their last four losses. They were all, like, last 5 seconds, last 10 seconds, or literally last play of the game. So, I think Willard even mentioned it in the postgame. Like, we were owed one, and they took advantage of it.
I mean, yeah, and they did, and now they get to play Florida. Now, the funny thing about the Sweet 16 matchups is none are really like have this gigantic point spread. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, the Cinderellas aren't there. And I'm like, okay, here's the problem with that logic. Cinderellas are great because you can seem smart because you said, I picked that 14 seed. In the end, I'd rather see good games once we get the Sweet 16 rather than teams, a 14, like a Bucknell in there that, you know, they don't have a chance. Now, what, a couple years ago, we had the Final Four that I said, I hope everybody's happy because you got three Cinderellas in there in UConn, and it went about how you thought it was going to be. Wasn't that great of a Final Four. It was just UConn. It was like it was their party, and they knew it. They were the best team. I'm not a big fan of the, oh, I need all of these Cinderellas in there, but I look at the point spreads, and they're all, I think, the biggest one margin, I think, is the Michigan-Auburn at 7.5 right now. Going back to Maryland, going up against Florida, is this something? Because, you know, a lot of people got the Florida Gators winning the whole thing. Can the Big Ten – who's that Big Ten team that can make it to the Final Four? Maryland, do they have a chance against Florida?
I think they have a chance, but I think their guards have to play much better. They were very – they've been very inconsistent most of the year. I do think, like, Jacoby Gillespie, Rodney Rice have potential, but you don't see them both play well at the same time. And it seems like one game is Rice that's playing well, or one game is Gillespie playing well, or even in the same game, is Gillespie's going in the first half and Rice is going in the second half. To beat Florida, they're going to have all five of those dudes ready to go. And what I'm worried about with Maryland is that Florida team, they're big, they're athletic. You get in any kind of foul trouble and you got to go away from that crab five. Can Jordan Geronimo, Deshaun Harris-Smith, you know, Gapari, do they have guys that can step in and give them good minutes and not have it be a huge drop-off? Because Walter Clayton is a pro. Like, he could have went to the draft last year, decided to come back, and, you know, he saved Florida season. He's an All-American. You know, you got Martin, who played on that FAU Final Four team. You know, you got Biggs and Condon. Like, Florida's loaded. That's a really, really tough matchup for Maryland.
No, it is. When I look at this, I'm like, man, you almost are like, okay, enjoy. It feels like Maryland kind of had that Sweet 16 type of role. It's the only buzzer beater of the tournament. And congratulations, you get to play Florida. And I'm with you. I think that they're going to have the Crab Five are going to have to go out there and just from start to finish play this game. I just wonder if they're going to lose steam, because I've seen them when they go out there and they really just exert themselves. Even when they have good games, come that final 5 minutes, unless you effectively use your bench, they just start slowing down. And I mean, I remember when they came out to when they played Michigan at Chrysler, at the end of the game, it seemed just like two 70-year-old people playing one-on-one with no moves, both teams grabbing their shorts and sucking wind. So I look at this Maryland team against Florida, and I do question whether they can make it to that next step. And then let's just go locally. Two teams playing with possibly, because Lord knows, we talked about this on the radio, the chance to play each other in the Elite Eight. It's weird how they matched it up, but you got Michigan and Michigan State, both in the Sweet 16, both in the South. If both teams win, you got a game on Sunday for just like all the bragging rights. It goes like almost to the, was a couple years ago when Duke played North Carolina in Coach K's final game. It's one of those games that'll become the ultimate bragging right type of game. But before we get to that, you look at Michigan going up against the number one overall seed in Auburn. Now, this Michigan team, I don't know what Dusty May has done. And he said that, you know, it's something about playing on the road. It galvanizes this team. You've seen it a lot. They get to the Big Ten tournament early and they go and they win the whole thing. And then they go to out to Denver early and they struggled. They struggled against UC San Diego. But then in the second half, they kind of put things together. They did enough to win. But man, 2 days later, that Michigan team came out there, and I forgot the guy who hits the shot, and it made the score 70-66.
Oh, Wade Taylor.
Yeah, and then that was it. It was if that Michigan team plays the way they did in those final minutes, I don't know who beats them, because you didn't turn the ball over. You're getting shots. Now, I don't think that you're going to get the help that you got from the players who were just making shots like never before. The Ohio State transfer.
Yeah, Roddy Gale.
Roddy Gale. Like, okay. He was – Michigan fans were – they thought he was an Ohio State plant. Like, he came on the team just to bring the team down. All of a sudden, there's Roddy Gale. There's LJ Kaysine hitting big shot after big shot. Not turning the ball over. Trey Donaldson got some shots. They hitting free throws. Like, I'm watching this team like, wow, that's what it looks like when they put it all together. Will they be able to give you 40 minutes of that against, you know, Broome and the Auburn Tigers?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's funny you mentioned the Roddy Gale piece about it, because I remember being in Indy for the Big Ten tournament and there were Michigan fans behind me. I think it was during the Maryland game, and I'm hearing them like, hey, you got to take Roddy out. You got to take him out. Like Michigan fans were so over the Roddy Gale experience. And yeah. Then all of a sudden, he pretty much saves the season by having our performance. And you know he's athletic. You know he can drive. But him hitting four threes, like, that wasn't on the bingo card. Like, he had struggled so much just actually shooting the ball. But when you put that with his athleticism, you saw some of the stuff that Ohio State had last year, and you're like, hey, this dude could be a problem if he puts it all together. But I think, you know, having guys like him and Kaysine, like, it makes them more athletic in the backcourt. The fact that they can go drive and it's not just all Vlad, it's not all Wolf and relying on the pick and roll. They need other parts of the offense to work. And so when you combine those two, you know, in terms of getting in a post or driving, and then you have Kaysine, Gale, and Donaldson all able to get to the rack, like, that puts a lot of pressure on defenses. And, I mean, the way Auburn's been playing lately, you know, the first 29 games, first 30 games, you know, they were 85 points a game, only allowing 69. Now you're talking about the scoring's dropped 10 points over the last six games. The scoring defense has gone up 4 points. They've given up a lot of second chance points recently. Shania Broome in the tournament has not been great. He's 9 of 22 from the floor. He's 4 of 11 from the line. He hasn't made a three yet. He's only scored 22 points. And they're allowing, you know, over 30% on offensive rebounding. Like, there's absolutely a path here for Michigan. The way they've been crashing the glass recently, you know, if they do that again, like, they out rebounded Texas A&M, who's the best offensive rebounding team in the country. And if they can do that again, they'll be right there.
Yeah, because, I mean, I look at this Auburn team and it losing all the games going into the tournament. But as you said, because they had won so many games to begin with, they still were the number one overall seed, not Duke, but Auburn. I do think that Duke kind of got hit when Cooper Flagg got injured. And it was one of those, is he going to be back in time? We don't want to give him the number one overall. But watching the Auburn team, they kind of meandered their way through the first couple of games, not really flexing their muscle. I don't know if it's kind of like, you know, the sprinters in the Olympics, where you don't have to go all out until you get to the final stuff. You just got to do just enough to keep qualifying. That's what Auburn has. Like you said, looking at Broome, not that dominant player that he was at the beginning of the year, but for Michigan, will they be able to go out there and get the offensive rebounds? Will they be able to get the second chance points? And I guess, have we seen the end of the turnover problem with the Wolverines? Or, you know, is it just kind of waiting on the back burner and you know it's going to rise back up again?
They seem to come in bunches when they do happen. But Auburn's not really a team that forces a lot of them. You know, they're more like, you know, we'll try to shoot over the top. We got all of these, you know, long athletic guys. You know, good luck trying to get around us. And if you do, we got all this size in the paint. And we'll go ahead and get the rebound. And that's kind of how we'll get our break going. They're not really much of a gamble, you know, force a ton of turnovers, really get in your face kind of team, right? Like we've seen other Bruce Pearl teams be. And Baker Mazzara, we saw him in the Creighton game. He kind of left with the hip injury, came back, didn't look the same. You kind of wonder what his status is going to be. I know we both are kind of been out on Auburn, you know, before the tournament started. So I really wouldn't be surprised if Michigan was able to pull this off. I think the guards are probably going to decide it by whichever guard play is better. You know, I think Tahai Pettifer for Auburn's a pro. You know, he's been leading the team in scoring so far in the tournament, about 20 a game. So if Auburn's backcourt winds up beating Michigan's backcourt, they'll probably win it, because I think the paint could be a washer. It might even be in favor of Michigan.
See, but I look at it, when you look at Broome and you look at like Dylan Carwell, they got size.
Oh,
so they can match up with Area 51. Like, this is one time where, you know what, we can match size with size. We can match athleticism with athleticism. And it does, to me, boil down to the guard play, the Michigan guard play. Can you expect the same thing that you saw at the end of that Texas A&M game? Because, yeah, like I said, Harold, if they can, then, yeah, I think that they will. But if Michigan guards play the way that they've been playing all season, I think that the Auburn Tigers guards will just be too much for them. And you'll see the reason why they're the number one overall seed. Look, Dusty May has done a great job in getting this team to buy in and play. But we all know when things fall apart for them, they're kind of like Illinois. When it falls apart, it falls apart. It won't even be close. So when you watch this game, I guess what's the key thing that people should be looking for that will let you know who's going to end up winning this thing?
I'll say the paint. And I know we talked about the guards, but I think a lot of that also has to do with like driving and getting fouled and scoring in the paint too, not just shooting threes. And Michigan so far, they've only allowed 28 paint points per game in the postseason. I mean, like in their five postseason games, including the Big Ten tournament. And they're outscoring teams by seven because of those bigs. We saw against A&M, Pharrell Payne was great, but they didn't have anything else. And Michigan was able to score in the paint with Vlad, but they also were able to score in the paint with Gale driving, Kaysen driving, Donaldson driving. If Auburn's guards can't score in the paint, and then that turns into a rebound and a run out, I think Michigan's going to win the game. But if Auburn is controlling the paint, if they're the ones that are getting the rebounds and they're getting the free throw line and then they get Wolf and Golden in foul trouble, then I think Auburn wins the game. So I'm looking at that paint battle, seeing which team scores more in there.
Okay. Now let's go to the other game, that I guess the beginning game, the opening game in Atlanta. You're going to have Michigan State going up against Ole Miss. I think MSU is like a 3.5-point favorite in this game. I look at this Spartan team, and they played in Cleveland. They played okay. I probably say they played about a B-minus game. Kind of like Auburn, they did enough to advance. They fell behind, and then they ended up coming back and winning the game. Talk about stuff not on the bingo card. If I told you that it was you're basically looking at Cohen Carr in the first game and Frankie Fiddler bailing you out in the second game. Jace Richardson couldn't throw a penny in the ocean until like the final minutes of the game. And now you get it to go up against Ole Miss, a team that, look, MSU was able to slow down and keep New Mexico from hitting the threes. They kept the point guard away. He did nothing into the second half. New Mexico struggled. I mean, they were getting help from different places, but it wasn't coming from their main two people. Now, going to this game with Ole Miss, Ole Miss shoots a lot of threes. They've been shooting. I mean, I think they're like at 48% for the tournament. Threes, damn near 50%. That to me is going to be the difference. And Michigan State's one of the top three-point defensive teams. That to me, I mean, to make it real simple, who's going to win this game? Ole Miss comes out there and they're still shooting at a 50% clip. They move on. If Michigan State can shut them down, I think at that point, they're going to end up winning this game. And it may be the same formula where they fall down, but then they end up coming back. Now, eventually, that's going to end up biting them. I do think that you can't just – the only fast start here I've seen from this team was on senior day against Michigan when they actually jumped out ahead. But other than that, tell me if you've seen this movie before. They're down about 10 points in the first 10 minutes of the game, and then they slowly got to matriculate to get it to close to halftime, and then they put the team away in the second half. Jace Richardson looked like a freshman. He did. He wasn't great in either one of these games. I don't know if it was the pressure. I don't know what it was. Jaden Akins stepped up like a senior against New Mexico. Cohen Carr, well, I didn't see that coming. I mean, he looked like he actually has an NBA potential. Like he was out there making shots, not just dunks, but like, wow, he showed the athleticism. When you look at this Michigan State team, what do they need to do to go out there and move on and get to the Elite Eight and move past this SEC team in Ole Miss?
So I agree with a lot of that, and I'll add free throws. Free throws are a huge, huge issue for both of these teams. Ole Miss fouls a lot. And I mean, Michigan State has an extreme size advantage that they didn't have in the first two games. Even though Bryant was a low major team, they were, you know, 6'6 to 6'11 all across the board. And so it was kind of hard to deal with, you know, going up against bigger guards. In the New Mexico case, like they were big up front. You know, you saw the size bother some of the bigs. This is not that. Now, Ole Miss, their tallest player that actually plays is 6'8. Their guards are, you know, 6'1, 5'11. Right. They only play seven guys. Like they are a much, much smaller team. And I think you can drive on them. You can get fouled because they will foul you a lot. But as we've seen, Michigan State, at one point in the season, they were a top five free throw shooting team in the country. They were over 80%, you know, going into February. And, you know, since February 1st, that's down to 73%. And if you look at, and it's across the board, it's Fears going from 76 to 71. It's Fiddler going from 91 to 71. It's Holloman going from 94 to 74. It's Akins going from 87 to 56%.
Right. The only one that seems like they make the free throws is Cohen Carr.
Right. He's the only one who's gotten better.
Right. If the game was on the line, like, is that the person who I want to shoot two free throws if you're down by one? But he's the only one that seems like he's actually just money at the free throw line. So, but yeah, you're right. The free throw shooting is atrocious. And if they're going to foul you, you can't leave points out there, especially if you're not hitting your threes the way. I mean, they were awful shooting threes. It was funny because at halftime they were down by two. And I'm like, you realize I think they were 1 for 11. Like if they were 2 for 11, that they would be winning this game. They were missing and they were good looking shots. They just were not falling. On the flip side, you got LaShawn Padula, the point guard. I mean, he's shooting around 38% for the season. Like I said, this Ole Miss team is shooting lights out. If MSU can shut down the perimeter, it's as you said, their biggest guy is 6'8". So maybe, just maybe, you know, this is a game where you see a Xavier Booker get some time in the rotation because you don't have to worry about, you know, some big guy just down there posting them up. But for me, as I said, I think the easiest thing for MSU, if you could shut down that perimeter and just limit the threes and make them beat you with the two-man game, because I think you'll have the advantage on the rebounding board. I think you'll have the advantage in foul shots. That should be enough to get them going on and moving forward. But once again, Vegas is saying this is going to be a close game.
Yeah, and I definitely believe a lot in Vegas, but I just keep looking at this matchup, and it seems like almost too good to be true in terms of how good of a matchup it is. And I'm trying not to be overconfident in it.
I know, right? It's just like, what am I missing? Okay, I'm not the only one thinking, what am I missing here?
I'm like, why is this only 3.5? And I know a lot of it is Michigan State does come out slow, and then it takes a while for them to get going. And if you get down, you know, 12-2 again or whatever against a team that with more athletes and better shooting, then like that could be, you know, much tougher to come back from. Like you said, you know, they're shooting 49% from three in the tournament, 51% from the field overall. You wonder if that's a regression to the mean, because for the season, they're only 34% before the tournament and they were 44% from the field. I mean, they were outside the top 160 in both of those. And like, is this just a 2-game sample where they got really hot, or and does this continue, or does this come back down to earth? And like you said, like Michigan State now, they are the number one 3-point defense in the country. So they're allowing like 28% from three. So right. Even if you go halfway and say, all right, they'll make, you know, 34%. You should have more advantages across the board in terms of rebounding, second chance points, paint points, getting to the free throw line. If you're doing all those things like you're supposed to, then you should be able to win this game.
I look at what they did with Donovan Dent from New Mexico, who, you know, that's the guy who I was really worried about. Izzo had compared him to Tyson Walker, said, hey, he's quick, he can do this, he has size. And they just kind of said, nah, they got nothing. It was the one guy who just came out of nowhere.
Amzil.
Yeah, like, okay, he's going to be – because it always seems like when Michigan State plays somebody, somebody you've never heard of just goes off and starts hitting shots. But yeah, they kept Nelly Jr. Joseph. He was sucking wind. I mean, it was one of those where, okay, he got it down low, and then they made him make about 5 moves. And it sounds like not much, but after a while, he didn't have any backup in the second half. I mean, he literally, I'm at the game watching him. That's how he ended up fouling out the game, because he got a lot of ticky-tack fouls, a lot of reach in using his hands, where if he wasn't that tired, he would just be playing smarter, but he was tired and it worked out for them. So yeah, for me, I look at the MSU, you know, and then I got to wonder, is Jace going to step in and be that Jace Richardson that we all think, that because he regressed in that game. You saw he was struggling. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe make your first shot something easy. I think the same about Xavier Booker, because we'll get to that in a second. But like, if you make your first shot easy, then everything else kind of falls into place. Holloman's going to shoot threes. That's just what he does. But, you know, even Aiken shows, hey, I could drive to the basket if you let me. Holloman will even go high off the glass. But it's like, Jace, maybe you just need to see something go through the basket. And then once that happens, because, yeah, after you hit those 3 free throws, and then it was just like you saw the confidence. Now, they had enough points that they were okay, that they were winning the game. But I was worried, like, man, until Aikens hit that 3 with the shot clock falling down, the score was tied. I don't know about you, but I was worried, like, man, they may not make it to this next round. And Aikens hits the shot, and then Frankie Fiddler just, yeah, he bailed this team out. I mean, whatever he's getting in NIL money, it was well worth it. He earned it in that game.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's funny that we're talking about all of these guys. During the tournament, who do you think is Michigan State's leading scorer so far, and who do you think has the highest plus-minus? 2 different guys.
Wow, highest score? Is it Aikens?
Nope.
Holloman?
Trey Holloman
is the leading scorer.
Trey Holloman is your leading scorer, bench player. What about plus-minus?
Cohen Carr?
Nope.
Is it Frankie Fiddler?
Frankie Fiddler.
Oh, they have
outscored teams by 31 points when Frankie Fiddler's been on the court. He has been that impactful thus far in the tournament.
Okay, you know what? I'm not even going to ask you for a stat, because you just blew my mind with that one. Say that again. They've outscored – for the people in the back, say that again.
They have outscored teams by 31 points in these 2 tournament games with Frankie Fiddler on the floor. And they've allowed him to play the 4. He's had some mismatch issues there, because he's able to drive by quicker guys, get to the free throw line. He's able to get stuff in the mid-range. He is a pretty good rebounder. And so even though he struggled with shooting a three, he's been very aggressive in other places. And you saw at times Cohen Carr and Filler were the 4-5 in a couple of these games. And so especially in the Bryant game, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that again, because Ole Miss, again, they're pretty small and they like to shoot threes. And this might not be a game where you see two bigs play a lot. You might not see it much at all. And if there are times where, you know, Cooper is in foul trouble or Kohler isn't playing well, you might see a lineup with Fiddler and Carr at the 4 and the 5 just to try to match up.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. You know what, folks? And this is why he's on with us. But that's that right there. All right. In a game where I got to wonder, who did the Purdue AD pay off? They get to play 10 minutes from their campus. How does this, if I'm Houston, I got to be a little upset. Like, wait a minute. We the one seed. Why does Purdue get the advantage? Is that going to be enough? Because I thought it was going to be enough for Louisville, and we saw Louisville had an early exit. They were only playing 40 minutes from campus. Can the crowd help out the Purdue Boilermakers and they can pull off this upset?
I think it can help some, but I feel like this is an absolutely terrible matchup for Purdue.
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, I just, again, and it's the tournament. You know, maybe there's a guy who goes off that hasn't. Maybe this is the time where Fletcher Lawyer finds a shot. But Houston, the way they guard you, the way they attack the rim, the way they rebound the ball, I just don't know if Purdue has enough size to deal with all of that physicality that Houston brings. And they can shoot. Like, we saw LJ Cryer, you know, score 30 against Gonzaga. Like, he's a bucket getter from Baylor, and he's continued to do that at Houston. Super physical team, even though they're not, like, super tall. They're all around the same size. Outside of Trey Kaufman, Wren down low, I just don't know how they protect the rim. And if he gets in any kind of foul trouble, that's just a really, really big problem. So they're going to have to get contributions from some unlikely guys. We saw it in the first round. You know, Cam Heidi had a double-double. He crashed the glass really hard. They're going to need stuff from, you know, Jakari Harris, CJ Cox. Fletcher Lawyer is going to have to give them something, because if it's just the two, with it being Smith and Kaufman Wren, it's not going to be nearly enough to beat Houston. You're going to have to get some threes from some unlikely sources, and you're going to need that third score, period. It would be best if it was Lawyer, because you need someone to be able to stretch that defense out, and then they start making some shots. Maybe the crowd gets involved, and then that kind of tilts it in their favor a bit. But if you look at Houston, not only do you have to deal with Purdue, if you win that game, potentially Kentucky, who's right down the road too. I mean, they're by far the furthest away of the four in this region. And I know before Selection Sunday.
Tennessee, Kentucky playing each other. So,
right.
Yeah.
They're all three of them are much closer than Houston is to Indianapolis. And Houston, I know before the tournament started, asked to be in the West, but only the overall number one seed gets the option. So, once Auburn said, we want to be in the South, okay, everybody else just kind of falls in line. So they can ask the committee, but the committee doesn't have to say yes.
I still don't understand why they couldn't just say, okay, we're going to put you out. Because who's out of the way? Was it Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Houston's closer to San Francisco than Florida is. Like, it makes more sense to just have Florida go to Indianapolis, and then you can have Houston go to San Francisco. And, you know, geographically, it makes way more sense than what they're doing now.
Here's what I think is going to end up happening. And they're going to have to, with the conference all expanding, you're going to have to lose that. But we don't want to see rematches into the second weekend, because I think it was just a manipulation of, okay, this team had to go here, this team had to go there. Because, yeah, I mean, in theory, like, I look at the two seeds. Alabama and MSU, how about you swap those two? MSU is a 2-seed in Indy. Alabama be a 2-seed in Atlanta. That, to me, makes more sense. But I get where they're trying not to have the conferences play each other, but it's going to happen. You're seeing that with Tennessee, and you're seeing that with Tennessee and Kentucky. I think that down the road, you may see some of the conferences play each other, you know, in the round of 32, because it's just going to be no way to avoid that. Because right now, yeah, Houston got punished for really no reason whatsoever. I think Houston just got punished because I don't think people really still see them as a Big 12 team. They still see Houston as a mid-major team. It's just like they're actually good. They just fly under the radar. They're one of those teams like Baylor. They don't make a ton of noise. You just don't want to play them. But, yeah, I'm like, man, Houston got screwed in this because they're not going to have the home crowd advantage the way the other three teams will.
Yeah, and not only will it be the Purdue fans, it'll be the Kentucky and Tennessee fans too, because they don't want to play Houston. They much right. rather play Purdue. So if that game's close, it's going to feel very much like the underdog. All the fans start pulling for them against the top seed, and you're going to have all of the fan bases outside of Houston rooting for Purdue if that game is close at all.
Well, you know what? It's funny, Harold. I'm going to end it here. In Atlanta, it's both teams – both Ole Miss and Auburn will be inheriting fans, because in the first game, every Michigan fan will become an Ole Miss fan. And in the second game, especially if Michigan State wins, they'll stick around and become the biggest Auburn fans. I can't see either Michigan or Michigan State fans actually rooting for the other team. It's just not in the DNA. It's not in the nature. You could say, oh, you want to see that game played. You're going to be rooting for the other team. So the other team inherits fans. So that's a bonus. They don't even realize it yet, but they're going to be like, wait, wow, who are these people? Why are these people in green? Why are these people in blue rooting for our team? Because they hate the other team. That's why.
Yep. And it's funny, because if that was just two regular Big Ten teams, they would be rooting for each other.
I've seen it happen. It was 99. When Ohio State and Michigan State were in Tampa, St. Pete, and literally State fans would say go green, Buckeye fans would say go white, and then when the Buckeye game, I mean, they were cheering for each other. You're never going to see that in this game.
Yeah, and it happened in St. Louis when Michigan State and Illinois were playing
yeah.
each other. And, you know, Michigan State fans were doing ILL.
Yeah,
the first game, and in the second game, Illinois fans were starting to go green, go white chant. Like, you actually saw the Big Ten solidarity there. I'd be very, very surprised if you saw that in Atlanta.
I've often said that there's only one team that every Big Ten team hates, and it's Michigan. I mean, it's true. Like, nobody likes them, period. So we'll leave it at that. You got anything that can outdo your Frankie Fiddler stat?
I'll try. That's going to be a hard one to top for me, but
31 points. Wow. I'm writing that down.
So I'll say, we talked about the Michigan State second half. We talked about, you know, the New Mexico situation where they were down two, and you're kind of like, all right, well, I wonder if this is going to stick to the same script. And it kind of has. They've outscored 12 teams by double digits in the second half, including both of these tournament games. They are plus 30 in the second half in the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
And they've trailed by double digits 11 times this season, and they won 7 of those games. So if you have to put Michigan State away, kind of similar to Michigan too.
Wait.
Like, both of those teams, when they get down double digits and you get comfortable, don't get comfortable, because they got no problem bringing you back, reeling you back in, wearing you down, and they're running away from you at the end.
So you said they trailed 11 times?
By double digits this season.
And won how many?
7.
Wow. Okay. I'm writing all this stuff down. I'm using it for the show. Appreciate it.
Please do.
All right, Harold. Hopefully, we'll – I'm trying to think. Yeah, we'll be back next week, hopefully previewing a Final Four. You'll be there. If MSU makes it, I'm gonna join you there. Let's hope one of the teams make it. If you had to pick a team to make it to the Final Four, who you got?
I had Michigan State in my bracket, so I'm going to stick with that. But the way Michigan's playing right now, I'm not counting that out at all.
Okay. All right, for Harold Shelton, I'm Rico Beard. Thanks for watching. Keep liking and subscribing to Five Star Zone. Hopefully we'll keep this train going and we'll be having a Final Four preview next week. Until then, we'll see you later.